don't need no education.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Good morning. This is Rebecca Hagstrom. Welcome to the Saturday edition of Education Nation. We have a great show for you today, and we're wrapping up our series on Common Core State Standards. And I'm here with my co-host, Pete Hegseth, and in a few minutes, we'll be joined by the lead of Minnesotans Against Common Core, Linda French Bell. But right now in the studio, we have Kathy Smith. She is the curriculum director, the amazing curriculum director at Liberty Classical Academy.
Great school.
Yes.
It is a great school.
Shameless plug.
Yes. Proud to say it.
Kathy is back surely by popular demand.
There we go. We got the feedback.
We're excited to be here again on a Saturday morning talking about education issues. This is the third in a series about Common Core.
Right.
I want to make a plug as well that if you can't catch us live on KLBB on Saturday mornings at 10:30, you can check out the podcasts, which are on KLBB, but also on Liberty Classical Academy's site, where you can look at all the previous episodes. Today, we're going to jump into some issues on Common Core, but if you want to catch up, you binge listen is what the kids call it these days.
Oh, okay.
You can do so online and catch up on everything. I think it's been fun. As a quick comment, it's been fun to talk to people in Stillwater, but also people across Minnesota, others who are saying, hey, I catch your show on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
So a plug to you, Rebecca, and this show, Education Nation, and what's happening.
Pete.
I think we might have a listening audience here.
That's
there.
Pretty awesome.
And I think when we can bring some good content to bear like you do every morning, hopefully we're adding to the conversation.
Absolutely. So, and that was the whole point.
That's exactly
right. We really
right.
want to be starting a conversation on education. It's an important issue that often gets swept to the side.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it needs
really
to take front and center, especially right now.
Absolutely.
So we started off our series talking a little bit about, in general, what is Common Core to begin with, and kind of in generally, what are some of the problems with it. And then last week, we covered the topic of math standards with respect to Common Core, and we shared some pretty ridiculous math problems.
Right.
Today, we're going to delve into the English language standards, which, for our listeners, that doesn't just include English language.
Right.
It also includes the history and science standards that get rolled into the English language arts standards. And so we're going to start by kind of talking about what's wrong with those standards. Why do they not work very well? And then we want to, or why do they leave us lacking in that regard? And then we're going to look at some pretty specific examples. And then, Kathy, we're hoping that you will kind of talk a little bit about how different that looks from what we do at Liberty.
Sure.
It is amazing. I mean, last week you talked about standards. We talked about math. You think math, it's pretty straightforward. And the examples, Kathy, that you brought in and other, it just blew my mind with what they're doing to math.
Yeah.
And then preparing for today's show, you can drive a truck through interpretations of history and politics and English. It's scary.
It is scary.
And I'm looking at these examples. I think people are going to be shocked by what is happening with the manipulation of these standards and what it happens in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, one of the experts that is speaking out most about the English language standards is Sandra Stotsky. And she is a foreknown expert all across the nation, not only on English language, but also on the standards. And what she has said is that there is no way that these standards can prepare our kids for a future of being able to think deeply, critically analyze information. And part of the reason for that is because of this requirement of it being 50-50 informational text versus other type of text. And, you know, you might think on the outside, well, what's wrong with informational text? Does it seem that bad? And, you know, it seems practical. You know, we have to read informational text. But when was the last time you had a really in-depth conversation about some, you know, informational text that you just read?
Oh, hey, especially
analyze
when you're
this.
10, you're like, I can't wait to read some information.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, you know, not only is this a problem at the upper levels, but then when you're looking at little kids, how do they ever want to learn to read if they're being given informational text? That is just incredibly boring for them. But one of the things that Sandra Stotsky says, and I just want to, you know, kind of give some of her own words because she's obviously the expert. But she talks about the fact that ACT has also found this. And for those of you who are listening, the ACT test is one of the premier tests that we give as college entrance exams here in the U.S. And even they have said that complexity is super important when reading and teaching kids to think deeply because it's laden with literary features. It involves characters, literary device, tone, ambiguity, structure, elaboration, intricate language, and unclear intentions. But the contemporary selections on computer geeks, fast food, teenage marketing, and the working poor are hardly the kind of material to exhibit ambiguity, subtlety, and irony. Pretty profound, isn't it? And
yeah.
When you read that, I'm going to read that last part again. Contemporary selections on computer geeks, fast food, teenage marketing, and the working poor. So when you think informational texts, you're probably thinking, you know, information on, you know,
The founding fathers
or something. Yes. Exactly. No. We're talking about very shallow, unimportant information that is often being fed in the name of the ELA standards to our students.
Right. I think I remember the evolution of the grocery bag is also on there.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Can't wait to read
crazy,
that one.
Crazy, crazy. So, you know, obviously this does not lead to the deep thinking, critically analyzing right. kids that we are looking for and really that our society needs. And I actually was just talking to a woman at our school who's a physician at the University of Minnesota, and she said they're finding this even with the highest educated kids that are coming into the medical schools, that they know how to research, they know how to do what they're told, but they do not know how to think critically and analyze. Well, these are people going into the medical realm. We need people that can think and analyze information and
Absolutely.
Come to the proper conclusions. So let's look at some of these crazy examples.
Absolutely. But it's also part of what's always made America different is that any dictatorial or authoritarian regime can teach people how to want on information reading. Mm-hmm. It's the creativity and the subtlety and the beauty that comes with language and using it. And I think, Kathy, before we jump into the example, just contrast it briefly with what you teach at Liberty and how Liberty does it differently.
Well, as you know, we have the three stages, the grammar, logic, and rhetoric stage. And so in those stages, you need to develop a foundation to be able to think. But first of all, in the younger ages, they're not set up to think as deep as these standards would assume. Some of the things I saw in there, I thought, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But then as they get older, we absolutely want them to think deeply, and we want them to bring their moral values, their values, to come in and ask the question of, is this right or is this wrong? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's extremely important.
Absolutely.
Comparing and just using deep, rich literature.
Yes.
You know, we use the classics at Liberty because we know that the content includes all these things, literary
Absolutely.
Device, tone, ambiguity, structure, all the things that Sandra Stotsky said need to be included. To develop deep thinking.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, we've got Pride and Prejudice. You know, we don't shy away from the classics that ask the questions that are going to go through their Scarlet Letter, the Nibelungenlied, you know, all of those that take time to think and wrap your mind around some things you might question, whether it's right or whether it's wrong. And I was going to add to Pete what you were saying is that one of the best things about our nation is the freedom. The freedom to look at something and say, I disagree or I agree. And these standards are not setting up for that freedom
right,
for those students.
Right. Well, and Absolutely. Interestingly, we're seeing even that ability increasingly being silenced.
Absolutely.
The ability to speak out and say what you think. It's fine as long as you agree with the loudest voices in the U.S. And we're going to talk about that actually in our next show, right?
We are. In our next show, we're going to tackle the implications of education on our politics, which ought to be a juicy one.
Yes, so I think it will be.
Be here next Saturday. For sure. No, I'm not one. So I just think it's important to contrast what's being done through Common Core to the way most Americans are learning right now. And what's being done when you have the freedom to follow what makes sense historically and also, you know, have some moral values and excellence and standards, patriotism, that's what Liberty infuses those things throughout the process.
And we also would like them to enjoy reading. Yeah. I don't know. Call right. me crazy, but it's a skill you're going to need for the rest of your life.
It's an absolutely important skill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we have seen as through the years, children in our elementary grade hiding books under there, right?
You're talking about my own sons.
I watched my children go from non-readers to readers
because
of the content that they're reading.
Because they came into Liberty. And this is, we hear this story over and over and over. My own children included, they started in third and fourth grade when we opened, and I've heard other families say the same. My child did not like to read until they got to Liberty. And I firmly believe it's because of the way we go about it and the content that we're giving them, which is so outstanding.
Yeah. So I agree. Now, I'm not one to stand between the listener and absurd examples. So, Rebecca,
we want to entertain.
We do. Well, there are a number of absurd examples with respect to curriculum, and it kind of varies too in terms of what makes it absurd. But I wanted to share one kind of simple one that sort of talks about that kind of points to the pro-government, kind of pro-environmentalism view of a lot of these curriculums. And then I wanted to also point to one that talks about the inappropriate content that a lot of our older students are having to read through so-called literature. And but one of these relates to a little first grade assignment. And the title of the assignment says, and again, these are ELA standards, Draw Star Citizens.
So examples or excellent citizens.
Yes, excellent citizens. It says, finish the sentence by circling the words that describe star citizens, then draw star citizens. Well, the proper answer is I sit, right? I sit rather than running around. You know, I am quiet rather than loud. I am neat rather than messy. So quiet, sit, and neat are the proper answers. Okay. And they're again,
sounds like a perfect subject.
Right.
Or,
right.
Or a surf or, I mean.
Yes, yes.
A compliant,
and the next one talks about, you know, being in the hallway. But we are really going, we're running out of time here. I feel like we better move on to the very next example.
No, but we've got a couple, one number of examples. Those examples, they lead to saying you're just, it's small versus great and heroic.
Right.
It's compliant versus dissent.
Right. Yes. Right.
It's, you know what I mean? It's confined thinking versus big thinking.
Right.
And time and time again, kids are told to go back to, you'll just be that small citizen as opposed to talking about the heroic, the martial virtues, some of the other ones.
And don't bring your own views in. Right. Just do as you are told.
Be compliant. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we could go on for hours with examples like that. There's one particular example, Islam on 9/11, eight-year-olds, Rebecca, that are made to watch a video by an organization called Brain Pop, which apparently supplies to 20% of American schools, right?
Wow.
20% of American schools. And one parent reported that her daughter came home crying and had nightmares. And the characters in the video, Tim and Moby, a robot, gave a cheery view of Islam. Oh, Islam, in the video, this is what it says. Oh, Islam is a popular religion in the world. The vast majority of Muslims are nonviolent, and they do not agree with Al-Qaeda and its actions. In fact, the Quran, the holy book of Islam, calls for Mormons to be peaceful, not kill. It goes on and on and on and on and on. Aside from the fact that the religion of peace thing is something we can have a larger conversation with, it's clearly tilted towards saying, 9/11 happened, but don't blame it on those people unless I have an actual conversation about it.
And wasn't that after they had to watch videos of 9/11 twice. And these were 8-year-old kids, and that's why the one child went home crying.
Listen, we need to educate next generation about what happened on 9/11. I know there are kids today that don't remember.
Sort of
in a different context, at a different time, when they're prepared to handle it and engage with the big ideas that come with it. I'm thinking about the right time to talk to my son about it. I mean, he's asked me about it. He's 5.
Yeah.
I don't want some stranger with a bias in the classroom introducing it to him with a biased video. There's a better way to do it.
Absolutely. I wanted to share some more from the inappropriate content standpoint. This is what happens often in the older students' reading texts that they're given. We have books on the list that is one's called Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye. That same author wrote Beloved. Another one called Obossum. And these are books that probably most of us haven't heard of. And yet these were on the list as suggestions by Common Core when it first came out. They contain graphic sexual material and they portray pedophilia in a sympathetic light. It's pretty amazing.
So we go away from the classics and we go to the shock jock stuff of today that kids aren't prepared for.
Right.
We are unfortunately going to have to wrap it right there on some of the examples.
Oh, my goodness.
Just time is time.
Too fast.
There's too much. But seriously, we've got another episode to have here on stuff like this. We're coming back to talk to Linda Bell, who is the head of Minnesotans Against Common Core, a great conversation about where this state is going as it pertains to these kind of standards.
Mm-hmm. We don't need no thought control. Well, we are back and we are talking about Common Core today, and we are so happy to have a true expert on Common Core in the booth with us this morning, and her name is Linda Bell, and Linda runs Minnesotans Against Common Core, and she's been a passionate advocate for the proper education of our children right here in Minnesota. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. I have a mutual admiration for you as well in the school that you've started, so
thank you. Well, would you please take us kind of through your whole passion for how it developed with MAC, you know, the whole idea of Minnesotans Against Common Core. How did that start? And tell us a little bit about where that's led.
Sure. Well, back in 2013, a friend of mine from Florida, where I had been writing standards for the Department of Education, called me. She also wrote standards. She said, "What's going on with Common Core in Minnesota?" And I said, "I have no idea."
Wow.
And that was the summer where I started to talk with teachers in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Robbinsdale, where I taught. No one really knew very much about it. They did not know much about Common Core at all in the schools, nor the passage of it. And so it was really done in secrecy with the citizens. My organization, MAC, comprises parents and teachers and citizens, and we have a state board, and we have various smaller groups in each school district across the state.
That's wonderful.
Some are more active than others, but we also work at the Capitol. We work on legislation to try to push back a little bit on this initiative that's going into our schools.
Did you say that was 2013?
That was May 2013. That was our start.
Okay. And you were working on writing standards for the state, and yet you knew nothing about it.
I was writing standards back in Florida.
Okay.
And that would have been a decade earlier.
Okay. Got it.
But think about that. Yeah. I mean, that's the exact question I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Is you were involved in writing standards at the Department of Education.
Yes.
And you pay attention to these things. Even if you weren't a part of the Common Core development process, you'd still have a sense of what was going on. And you literally had to say, "I don't know." I mean, we've been talking about this as our third week talking about this. Yeah. It really was a veil of secrecy.
Yes.
Teachers are just kept so very busy that we just don't think about the bigger picture, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So.
Well, and it just points to the fact that, as we've shared in our previous shows, that this was written by a group of individuals behind closed doors.
Yes.
And it is now copyrighted.
Yes.
And it is now basically dictating the curriculum of the land. And yet, you, a standards writer yourself, knew nothing about it, which I find just appalling.
No, I just did my job.
Certainly not open.
I did my little job.
What do they say there? Open, transparency.
It's always open, transparency.
Yeah, I was working in the Sunshine State. Working in the sunshine.
Let me ask this as a follow-up. So how is it affecting Minnesota classrooms, and how are you seeing it affecting elementary and secondary education here?
Well, the entire Common Core reform is not just standards. A lot of people think it is just a set of national standards, which actually is not a very good idea unless you want to change the entire country. But it also has to do with curriculum and surveys. Surveys are used often as curriculum, and that data is sent off to other people. And then it's also it also comprises testing and assessments for federal accountability. An incredible amount of data collection and dissemination. There are literally open portals of our students' information going out to all kinds of entities, and that is very, very unfortunate. We need to get that closed down. Then we've got workforce tracking, which is that cradle-to-grave tracking from prenatal to the end of our lives.
Do we take that last breath? Huh?
Right.
Makes me want to move to a wood burning stove little shack somewhere.
Yeah. Exactly. We've talked about some of that data collection in previous shows as well, and that's a pretty significant issue. In fact, weren't you just at the legislature just last week here in the state of Minnesota?
Yes,
tell
we
us
were.
A little bit about
yes,
that.
Yes, we were out. We did a hearing on Thursday the 17th, and that was about legislation that's authored by Representative Eric Lucero from Dayton, and he is his bill is about the surveys that I was talking about. There are hundreds of surveys that students are taking in the public schools and some private schools, too, that take federal funds. Mm-hmm. And it's embedded within the curriculum. Sometimes if it's online, students finish a lesson. They can't go to the next lesson until they've taken a survey. Mm-hmm. And these are embedded in children's games as well.
It sounds like the Army, which I was in, which you had to fight, though, in the Army. Not
right. Right. And so this bill is about parents being able to opt in. It's an opt-in on survey, so everyone knows what's going on with parental disclosure. And it got a very good hearing
good.
In the House
good.
Committee. It That's really, good. Really did.
And, you know, maybe you can address very briefly some of the reason why we're seeing more of this data collection is because the FERPA law was changed.
Yes.
And that opened up opportunity for entities like the University of Minnesota, other places, to collect data without parents really knowing about it. Can you tell us a little bit about that to our listeners?
Yes. And back in 2011, there were a lot of national coalitions of data companies, those who are involved in data, are right here in Minnesota, the CEO of the Data Quality Campaign, they were pushing to expand the SLEDs, the State Longitudinal Educational Databases, which collect information, one of the entities that collect information on kids. And they wanted to expand the kind of data they could collect, and so they had an executive order, President Obama
One of those good ones.
Executive
right.
order.
One of his many.
To change FERPA, which is the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, which always protected families. And now it doesn't protect families at all. It is a very permissive law that gives away data to any authorized representative of the school.
Right.
Well, that could be
anyone.
It
they
could
call
be anyone.
It stakeholders, right? Stakeholders and authorized representatives.
Third parties,
yes.
whatever you want to
yes.
call them.
So basically it's a wide open, it's a blank check.
Well, as,
on
the, as
children's
the,
data.
The ed tech companies call it right now, this is the wild, wild west of education.
Yes. And you know what? That's how it feels. As an educator myself, as I've mentioned earlier, I get so many emails from all of these companies that are trying to sell all of their data-based curriculum. And, of course, this is all under the idea of personalized learning. But as I've said before, it is so impersonal because it is like rats and mazes. And yet the companies are seeing huge opportunities financially to gain off of this. In fact, I just read recently that Mark Zuckerberg is now entering into the fray of trying to develop data-based curriculum.
Right.
So they're all seeing dollar signs in their eyes, and they're all thinking, hey, this is taxpayers' dollars that I can get pretty easily if I come up with the next best, you know, data-driven curriculum.
Yeah, so, it's absolutely more about the money than it is about serving students well with really good curriculum.
You know, it's it's. I have to chime in. It's Saturday morning, and you're making me sad.
Sorry.
All right.
Go grab another cup of coffee.
No, I need another cup of coffee. I'm saying no. I just hear it. I sit this, and we have a lot of data and a lot of companies making a lot of money off of kids whose information is being shared with anybody and anybody anytime. For those of us that care about privacy, that's inherently concerning. And yet, as we talked about last week, Rebecca, and as you're familiar with, we no longer have kids that know how to carry the one in mathematics
or
do basic arithmetic and reading. I mean, the core basic skills are being lost, but all this technical super whiz-bang stuff that isn't proven at all is being valued and data is being given away.
Right.
There has been
it's depressing.
No research
it
on
is.
Any of this.
Well, they are the research, and we've talked about that. They are, these students that are in school today are becoming the research.
They are the guinea pigs.
Yeah. What did you just tell us right before we went on air about Fridley?
Well, this is something that, that the United States Department of Education has written about in a document called Perseverance
grit, tenacity.
And grit, mm-hmm. grit. Mm-hmm. And they basically want to, you know, it's like Gates, Bill Gates wants to study the brain, mm-hmm. map the brain and understand, you know, you intimately. Mm-hmm. But they, in Fridley, they've taken this document and taken one of the measurement ways to measure kids, and they've attached a camera to the outside of their laptop so that the camera is watching the child's eye movements while the child interacts with the curriculum. Mm-hmm. And this is all about emotional values,
emotional
social mm-hmm. Information. And so that is what they are looking at. They are looking to understand that child.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we talked about this a few weeks ago, too, the grit, tenacity, and perseverance research that the government put out a number of years ago now. And they admitted there that they don't know that this is not detrimental to children. And yet, what are we seeing? We're seeing all of these ideas that were in that document being mm-hmm. spread across the
exactly.
nation. Florida, didn't you say there's like 3 or 4 districts that just decided to be research sites for these same types of learning mechanisms? Is that right?
That was for competency-based education, mm-hmm, which mm-hmm. is the new lingo for personalized
right,
learning
right,
plans
right.
or personalized learning.
Data-driven, yep. and it's yep. all being collected through
one-to-one,
eye movements and
yeah,
all
one-to-one.
That.
Mm-hmm. If your child is on a one-to-one online learning system, this is what it mm-hmm. is. It's not the teacher teaching them anymore. Mm-hmm. It is a online curriculum
right.
vendor.
Now
right.
I'm both
right.
sad and confused. I have to ask you, though, Linda, you're on the front lines
yeah.
of this fight with Common Core. Really? No, really. I've been an advocate. Mm-hmm. What you're doing is the heavy lifting of trying to educate
yes.
people and activate. How, do you feel like you're winning? Do you feel like you're making progress? Are people waking up to Common Core? Just as you talk to people generally, do you feel like there's going to be or could be an appetite for reform here in Minnesota? Or do you feel like the deck is just so stacked that that Common Core's here to stay?
Oh, no. You know, for all of the people we have in our group, and we're getting up to around 5,000, you know, each state reacts a little differently. New Yorkers are in your face.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesotans are a little bit quieter, more thoughtful, more respectful. And but there's this undercurrent disagreement
mm-hmm.
and disgruntlement with the program, for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's good to hear.
Yeah, for the people that we have in our group is one thing, but there are many, many more. You know,
feel like people are realizing
could know 50 people that are also
right.
not with this.
Yeah, mm-hmm. no, I just know mm-hmm. one of the great things about being on the show is learning from Rebecca, learning from people like you. I just think about how engaged I am in policy and politics, and I don't even know the contours of Common Core.
Mm-hmm.
So just the education side of what you do, I'm grateful for what you do to
yeah, thank
to
you.
Bring this to the fore. Really,
yes.
it's people like you that help wake people up. To stuff
yes.
like this.
Yeah, thank you so much, Linda. We are so happy to have you on the show. And we would encourage people to go and take a look at MAC on Facebook. And I think you have a website
we
as well.
We also have a website. It's mnagainstcc.com.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
mnagainstcc.com. And you can sign up there, I presume, to join a newsletter or get
you
involved with the organization.
You can sign into the emails. Right. You can mm-hmm. do whatever. Yep.
Excellent.
Linda Bell, a frontline fighter for freedom against Common Core. I love it. We're grateful to have you here. Just like you two are like two peas in a pod.
Yeah, we
I'm
are.
Telling you.
Yes, exactly.
If you can see in the studio, these are a couple of good Americans in here this morning. So we're so grateful to have you. Thanks for coming in this
Thank
morning.
Thank you.
Thanks, Linda. Well, it was so wonderful having Linda with us in the studio today, and we do wish that we had had a little bit more time to give you some examples of the ELA standards at work in the curriculum. And so I'm going to go ahead and post a couple of these links on my Twitter feed.
Nice.
If you want to go ahead and check some of these out, so you can check them out.
What is that Twitter feed?
At Rebecca Hagstrom.
At Rebecca Hagstrom. Go for a couple more tweets of examples, because they're really, we could have gone on forever. We just don't have enough time in with
right.
radio.
Right.
More examples of the English standards at Common Core at Rebecca Hagstrom online.
And by the way, Rebecca, R-E-B-E-K-A-H, not
C-C-A. There we
C-C-A.
Go. I like
Thank
it.
Thank you.
And hey, folks, always remember, check out Liberty Classical Academy, libertyclassicalacademy.org for more information. We're here every Saturday, 10:30 a.m. with Education Nation. Rebecca, you always do a great job. We had Kathy Smith on today talking
yeah.
about curriculum.
And
we had Linda on about Minnesotans Against Common Core. Great stuff.
Thank you. You
Thank
too,
you.
Pete. Thanks.